గోపీజనవల్లభగిరివరధారి గోపిజన వల్లభ గిరివరధారి యశోదానందన రజ జన రంజన యశోదానందన గజ జన రంజన యశోదానందన వ్రజ జన రంజన యమునా తీరావన చారి యమునా తీరావనచారి జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ విహారి రాధా గోపీజనవల్లభ గిరివరధారి గోపీజనవల్లభ గిరివరధారి యశోదానందన గజ జన రంజన యశోదానందన గజ జన రంజన యమునా తీరావనచారి యమునా తీరావనచారి జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ విహారి జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ విహారి జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ విహారి
దేవోమిషుపాద పరమహంస పరిరాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శిఖర శిశుపతి అభయ చరణారవింద భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదికి అనంత కోటి వైష్ణవ వృందకి ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరంగ వాడదు బస్ నెంబర్ 1 ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंद गोप कुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 12, text number 20.
Yesha data sharan yascha yata hyaushi narashibihi yasho vitanita swanam दौष्यन्तिरिव यज्मना। येष दाता शरण्यश्च यता ह्यौषी नरश्चिभिः यशो वितनितास्वाना दौषन्तिरिव यज्मना। येष दाता शरण्यश्च यता ह्यौषी नरश्चिभिः यशो वितनितास्वाना दौषन्तिरिव यज्मना। श्री राधा कुंज वैसी जगह ने कहा कि
माताजी
शरण्यश्च
Yeshah. This child. Data. Donor in charity. Sharanyah. Protector of the surrendered. Cha. And. Yatha. As. He. Certainly. Aushinarah. The country named Ushinara. Shibihi. Shibi. Yashah. Fame. Vitanita. This emanator. Swanam. Of the kinsmen. Daushantihi Riva. Like Bharata. The son of Dushyanta. Yajmanam. Of those who have performed many sacrifices. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki, this child will be a munificent donor of charity and protector of the surrendered, like the famous king Shibi of the Ushinara country, and he will expand the name and fame of his family like Bharata, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta. Purport. A king becomes famous by his acts of charity, performances of yajnas, protection of the surrendered, etc. A Kshatriya king is proud to give protection to the surrendered souls. This attitude of a king is called Ishwara Bhava, or factual power to give protection in a righteous cause. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord instructs living beings to surrender unto Him, and He promises all protection. The Lord is all-powerful and true to His word, and therefore He never fails to give protection to His different devotees. The king, being the representative of the Lord, must possess this attitude of giving protection to the surrendered souls at all risk. Maharaj Shibi, the king of Ushinara, was an intimate friend of Maharaj Yayati, who was able to reach the heavenly planets along with the Maharaj Shibi. Maharaj Shibi was aware of the heavenly planet where he was to be transferred after his death. And the description of this heavenly planet is given in Mahabharata Adiparva. Maharaj Shibi was so charitably disposed that he wanted to give over his acquired position in the heavenly kingdom to Yayati, but he did not accept it. Yayati went to the heavenly planet along with great rishis like Ashtaka and others. On inquiry from the rishis, Yayati gave an account of Shibi's pious acts when all of them were on the path to heaven. He has become a member of the assembly of Yamaraj, who has become his worshipful deity. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, the worshipper of the demigods goes to the planets of demigods, Yanti Deva Pratha Devan. So Maharaj Shibi has become an associate of the great Vaishnava authority, Yamaraj, on that particular planet. While he was on the earth, he became very famous as a protector of the surrendered souls and a donor of charities. The king of heaven once took the shape of a pigeon hunter bird, eagle. And Agni, the fire god, took the shape of a pigeon. The pigeon, while being chased by the eagle, took shelter on the lap of Maharaj Shibi, and the hunter eagle wanted the pigeon back from the king. The king wanted to give it to some other meat to eat and requested the bird not to kill the pigeon. The hunter bird refused to accept the king's offer, but it was settled later on that the eagle would accept flesh from the body of the king of the pigeon's equivalent weight. The king began to cut flesh from his body to weigh in the balance equivalent to the weight of the pigeon. But the mystic pigeon always remained heavier. The king then put himself on the balance to equate with the pigeon, and the demigods were pleased with him. The king of heaven and the fire god disclosed their identity, and the king was blessed by them. Devarishi Narada also glorified Maharaj Shibi for his great achievements, specifically in charity and protection. Maharaj Shibi sacrificed his own son for the satisfaction of human beings in his kingdom. And thus, child Parikshit was to become a second Shibi in charity and protection. Daushyanti Bharata. There are many Bharatas in history, of which Bharata, the brother of Lord Rama, Bharata, the son of King Rishabha, and Bharata's son of Maharaj Dushyanta are very famous. And all these Bharatas are historically known to the universe. This earth planet is known as Bharata or Bharatavarsha due to the king Bharata, the son of Rishabha. But according to some, this land is known as Bharata due to the reign of the son of Dushyanta. So far as we are convinced, this land's name is Bharatavarsha, was established from the reign of Bharata, the son of King Rishabha. Before him, the land was known as Ilavrita Varsha. But just after the coronation of Bharata, the son of Rishabha, this land became famous as Bharatavarsha. But despite all this, Bharata, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta, was not less important. He is the son of the famous beauty Shakuntala. Maharaj Dushyanta fell in love with Shakuntala in the forest and Bharata was conceived. After that, Maharaj forgot his wife Shakuntala by the curse of Kanva Muni, and the child Bharata was brought up in the forest by his mother. Even in his childhood, he was so powerful that he challenged the lions and elephants in the forest and would fight with them as little children play with cats and dogs. Because of the boy's becoming so strong, more than the so-called modern Tarzan, the rishis in the forest called him Sarvadamana, or one who is able to control everyone. A full description of Maharaj Bharat is given in the Mahabharata, Adiparva. The Pandavas or the Kurus are sometimes addressed as Bharata due to being born in the dynasty of the famous Maharaj Bharata, the son of King Dushyanta. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuh Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Abhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamakhyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vidam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vidamscha Namavum Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashchatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Rupasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This child will be a munificent donor of charity and protector of the surrendered, like the famous King Shibi of the Ushinara country. And he will expand the name and fame of his family like Bharata, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta. So here we are reading from the chapter entitled Birth of Emperor Parikshit. All the great qualities of the child Parikshit are being spoken here, how he is going to rule the world. In the Vedic times, people were very eager to have children who could do something valuable for the world. And most importantly, spiritually, offer some welfare for the people. And especially a son of a king, he is going to be the next monarch. He is going to be ruling the world. And he will have the absolute power in his hands. And it is totally up to him, as we say, yatha raja, tatha praja. Whatever way he will guide the people, the masses are going to live their lives. So, naturally, the one who plays the role of a king is a very, very, very important role, vital role. So the brahmanas and sages were also very anxious to know who is going to be the next king. Generally speaking, the son of a king would become the next king in the Vedic monarch system, monarchy, that's the system. Now somebody may ask, what if the son of a king is unqualified? Of course, if he is unqualified, he would not be made the next king. Then they will have to look for someone else. But generally it is seen in the royal dynasties that the son of a king has always been a very qualified child. The reason is, in Vedic times, the children were born based on the Garbhadhan Sanskar. The spiritual acumen and all the necessary qualities were impregnated into the child's system even before the child is born. So that is how the children were born in the Vedic times. Righteous kings produced righteous sons also, in general, as a general rule. Like we say, great children have great parents. Great children have great mothers and great fathers. So, Parikshit being a king coming in the lineage of Pandavas was naturally a very righteous king. When we say a king was a righteous king, a great king, there are many virtuous qualities that he is supposed to possess. Like we read here, a king is supposed to be chivalrous and compassionate, and also should be famous for charity, as we see here. How can a king be simultaneously chivalrous and be compassionate also? So the king has the bahubal or the kshatra or the ability to subdue others. He has that power. So he would use that power to keep the wicked elements or vicious elements in the society under control. At the same time, the king is supposed to be compassionate to the helpless and the weak or the innocent. In fact, the very word kshatriya means one who gives protection to the innocent. That's the definition of the very word kshatriya. One who gives protection to the innocent. Now, violence is nowhere appreciated in the scripture that one should show violence, or it's not that the kings would delight in being violent in the sense that, like, people sometimes kill a hen or a goat and delight in laughing, seeing the innocent creature suffering piteously and dying. So the kings would never delight in seeing such kind of violence at all. Although sometimes it appears that they delighted in big wars. Actually, violence, why was it necessary? Because quite often the vicious elements in society, venomous elements in society, would become unreasonable in mishandling the innocent living entities, namely women or children or the cows and such old people. When they are mishandled, in order for avoiding those innocent living entities being mishandled, a king would have to adapt to violence. Because the unreasonable elements would use violence, so king also would have to counteract violence by violence, and he would have to subdue them. So they had to use that. So the king has to be chivalrous, at the same time compassionate to the innocent creatures, and he has to offer them protection. and at the same time be greatly charitable. In fact, being charitable is considered one form of enjoyment in the Vedic life. Like we say, sense gratification. One form of sense gratification is giving charity. You will find Lord Krishna speaking that in the 16th chapter. He says, Ishwaroham aham bhogi siddhoham balavan suki adyo abhijanavan asmi konyosi sadrisho maya. And then he says, yakshye dasyami modishye iti ajnana vimohita. In that he says, along with the list of different items, he also says, I will give charity. I am always surrounded by aristocratic relatives and I will give charity and in this way I will enjoy. So even common people, even the cruel-hearted people or even those who are not so advanced in religious principles, even they would give charity in the Vedic times. In fact, Krishna is listing charity there as one of the items of demoniac beings. Isn't it? Then what would the righteous living entities do? They would give right kind of charity. Like for example, if a drunkard is giving liquor to another fellow, that is a charity in mode of ignorance. You also drink like me and become intoxicated like me. That is a charity in ignorance. But there is a charity in passion, where you give some charity with the expectation of some fruits, name, fame and prestige. And there is charity in goodness, where you give without any anticipation, or only for purification you give. So, naturally King Parikshit was a very spiritually advanced person. He was very charitable, like the example is given of Shibi Chakravarti, whose charitable nature is beyond comprehension. Generally people like the idea that I am okay, you are okay. You know, there's a book, famous book called as I am okay, you are okay. Which means, first I will take care of my happiness and then your happiness. And I don't mind giving in charity. If I have too much excess, I finish my food and whatever food is left, now instead of throwing it, I will give you in charity. Somebody may do that. But for one to behave like Ranti Dev, who gave off after 48 days of fasting, giving off his food and the water, while his hands were trembling out of hunger. That is something unimaginable. Same way with Shibi Chakravarti, not only he gave any food or water, Shibi gave flesh from his own body. Who can do that? Who can dare do that? Cutting off flesh from one's own body and giving. At last he put his own body. When, as you heard the story of Shibi Chakravarti in the purport, when he kept on adding flesh to the pain, he found that, the pigeon is too heavy. And then he said to others, now what can I do? I am a king. I am supposed to give protection to my citizens. Now because I have the duty, I will give myself. And he himself went and sat in the pain. And immediately the pigeon and the eagle, they transformed into Indra and Agni. And they gave abundant blessings to Shibi Chakravarti. So here we understand how much the kings were so duty bound in offering protection to the citizens. That is one of the main activities of a king. When we say protection is for the five innocent people, namely the children, the old people, the cows, the brahmanas and women. They all need protection. Like you will find as predicted here about Parikshit Maharaj, there will be a later incident which will happen about Parikshit, how Parikshit will offer protection to the innocent creatures. As a great emperor of the world, not only Parikshit, for that matter any king, they would go for rounds disguised in some other dress so that nobody will be able to detect them. And sometimes the king would look like a farmer, sometimes he would look like a ordinary worker. Nobody can guess who the king is. So the king sometimes would go around the city to find out whether citizens are happy, whether everyone is doing well. Sometimes the king would go in his own natural form of a king. Naturally everyone would salute him and offer the respects to him. So one day, Parikshit Maharaj, boarding his golden chariot, taking bow and arrow in his hands, he was going around the city to find out how the people are. At one place, suddenly he found there was a bull which was wounded and who was piteously weeping tears. And there was also a cow who was also crying. So the Bhagavatam first canto explains that the bull was the personified dharma, religious principles. And he was standing with hardly one leg. The other three legs were beaten up and they were partly broken. He could not stand very stably. And there was a Shudra who was dressed in the form of a king with a mukut and a king's dress, royal dress. He was wearing a crown, having a large stick in his hand. He was beating the cow and beating the bull. And every time he would be about to beat, the bull would tremble out of fear and she would be urinating. And the cow was also weeping. So seeing this sight, Parikshit Maharaj became furious. He went right up to the spot and he chastised that Kaliraj, king, who appeared like a king. He was actually not a king. He was dressed like a king and punishing, as if the cow and bull had no protectors. So he asked, just because Krishna and Arjuna have disappeared from the sight, you think you can do anything you want? You can beat up these innocent creatures? And just because they cannot open their mouth and retaliate, you're beating them like this. So who are you? So when he shouted at Kaliraj, then Kali understood, here is the king of the whole world who has come. So Parikshit felt pity on these innocent creatures also. He turned to the bull and said, in our kingdom, we have never seen any living being crying tears like this. Because always there have been kings in our dynasty who have been offering protection to all the citizens. Why are you weeping like this? So he felt very moved in his heart. And he was ready to kill Kali. Immediately he removed his sword to kill Kali. So when this scene was being narrated by Suta Goswami, and all the sages of Shaunakadi Rishis were hearing, they just could not continue hearing this particular scene. It's a very piteous scene because this fellow is taking a large stick and beating the cow and beating the bull, and Parikshit is removing the sword and about to kill Kali, but he's not killing him. So they were all asking Suta Goswami, why are you telling us such an inauspicious thing about the cow and the bull being beaten up? And why did the king not kill that Kali immediately at the very first sight? Why was he having a dialogue with him? He should have killed him immediately. And then they said, do not tell us anything if it does not have connection to Krishna. They were saying, because they didn't want to even hear about cows being beaten. But in modern times, millions of cows are being slaughtered. Those rishis, munis would die on the spot if they even hear about this. So Prabhupada says in one of the Bhagavatam purports that today the cows are being dragged to be taken to places and tortured in ways which are unmentionable in the pages of Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says. So the cow represents the earth and the bull represents the personified religious principles. So the personified religious principles has four legs, which means mercifulness, truthfulness, cleanliness and austerity, these four principles. So the bull was trembling with broken legs because the three principles are gone, the austerity, cleanliness and mercifulness are gone, which appear in the Kali Yuga in the form of pride, or uncleanliness appearing in the form of illicit connection with opposite sex, our affection, our attachment for the opposite sex, our pride and intoxication and all these things. So the only thing that remains to some extent in Kali Yuga is the truthfulness. So the other three legs are almost broken. So seeing this sight, Parikshit was so furious. So Kaliraj immediately removed his crown, he removed his kingly dress and fell at the feet of Parikshit Maharaj. As I told you, the king is supposed to give protection to the innocent or protection to those who surrender. Then Parikshit did not take action on Kali immediately. Of course, he decided not to kill Kali, and then Kali told him that I am also one of your citizens. Please give me a place to live. And Parikshit was not willing to give any place in the beginning. But later on he gives him places where there is meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex. These are all going on. So these are all principles of adharma. So he gave them. And also he said, in my kingdom nobody can hoard any gold. Anybody hoards any gold, I will take it and use it for propagating Sankirtan Yajna. That's what he did. Just like the income tax comes for a raid. So Parikshit Maharaj, Minnesota would go on a raid and take away the gold and use it in Sankirtan Yajna. Nobody could actually hoard gold. But Parikshit told Kali, if anybody is hoarding gold, you can also go and reside there. He told them. So here you find Parikshit Maharaj so chivalrous. In fact, it is said Kaliraj, later on after Parikshit went away, Kali was trembling so much, he got nightmares of Parikshit. Having all the time with bow and arrow coming in the golden chariot, coming to kill him. Where would he turn around in Parikshit's kingdom? He only saw Parikshit everywhere. He saw him like that. So chivalrous was Parikshit Maharaj, as it is being glorified here. So the kings were like that, and the kings had to be like that in order to offer protection to the weaker section of society. So you'll find later on, after Shringi had cursed Parikshit to die in state, and he is the one who protects the venomous elements like the thieves and rogues from exploiting women and wealth in the society, and the animals also. They can't be tortured, women cannot be exploited, the wealth of the country cannot be exploited. Without such a chivalrous king, all the citizens would run hither and thither like poor lambs who are attacked by a lion or a tiger. So Samikrishi said, you have done a great disservice to society. A society without a king is very dangerous. And very soon, unwanted elements will assume power and they will exploit the society. And that's true in any society. So in the modern times, we find politicians looting the wealth of the public and filling up their pockets, and what to speak of protecting the citizens. So there is a lot of criminalism, there is a lot of corruption, there is a lot of wealth, public wealth being misappropriated, known to the public or unknown to the public, and nobody is able to take any action. Why? Because there is no righteous king like Parikshit, or there is no righteous king like Yudhishthira or Arjuna or such great kings who can control. Nowadays, in the name of non-violence, Prabhupada used to call it as nonsense non-violence. In the name of being non-violent, many people are being forgiven. At last they hung Saddam Hussein. I know that came in the paper. But it took such a long time. After he enjoyed most part of his life, then he was hung. After he exploited for several decades after that. So in Kali Yuga, for one decision to be done in the court, it would go on for decades. And action wouldn't be taken at all. So that is because there are no righteous kings. That's the main problem. And you find similar histories of all the kings. Like the kings would offer protection not only to the poor creatures like the cows and bulls, but they would offer protection to the sages and saints also. Like for example, the sages would live in the forest, and the kings would go to the forest to clear up the bushes so that the sages can perform penance peacefully. They would also clear up the animals in the forest sometimes, because the animals may attack the sages living in the forest. So that was also one type of protection they would offer. Like you find Vishwamitra going and requesting Dasharatha to give Ram for 10 days to kill all the rakshasis who would come and cause a havoc in the Yajna Kund, by pouring stool and urine and all kinds of abominable substances like meat and everything. So the kings would go to the forest to offer protection against the Rakshasas interfering with the sages' Brahminical activities. Yeah, that was also another type of protection which was very much needed. Like you find when many sages were performing penances, sometimes the Ravana's agents would come. Like Karan Dushan, for example, Karan Dushan came with lakhs of soldiers, and Ravana single-handedly kills all of them, and kills Karan Dushan also, who are Ravana's own brothers, and kills them and sends them all away. And Ravana becomes very angry seeing this. So then Ravana goes to meet his old friend Maricha, and Ravana tells him that I came to know the news that happened in Janasthan, where my brothers were killed with all the soldiers. I heard that these forest dwellers, Ram and Lakshman, have killed. So now I just came to discuss about this with you. I want to kill this Rama and I want to take away his wife Sita. When Maricha heard it, he said, my dear king, let me tell you, I used to go for creating trouble in the sacrifices of many of the rishis before. At one time, when myself and some other demons, we all went, this Rama, he sent an arrow by which he hurled me 800 miles far away from that spot into the ocean. And then I swam and I came to Sri Lanka. And he said, till that I remember this. This Rama is Sakshad Lord Vishnu. He is non-different from him and he is extremely powerful. Somehow my life was spared. But heart of hearts, he said, I always had the vengeance to attack Rama. But still, although I have had the desire to attack Rama, I couldn't. And he said, again I went with the desire to... Actually, first time when he tells this much truth, immediately Ravana subsides. He says, okay, Maricha, now I understood. Now I will not go to fight. Then he goes back to Sri Lanka. But later on, Shurpanakha comes. And she comes and tells the brother, what are you doing, foolish brother? You know, my nose and ears have been cut off by this. And she tells the whole story about Rama and Lakshman, what they did to her. And she humiliated Ravana in front of his ministers, saying that what kind of Rakshasa king are you, that you could not take an action against the forest dwellers. And Ravana became very insulted. And then he felt. And all the more so, he became even more attracted to kill Ram when he heard about the beauty of Mother Sita. Then he wanted to go and kill Rama and take away Mother Sita. That was his plan. So now he went to Maricha again for the second time with his plans. And Maricha said, why? Again, you are desiring the same old thing. I am your friend, I am telling you. He said, as I told you the other day, I had a revengeful attitude towards Ram. So I again went into the forest. This time I didn't go as an ordinary person. I went in the form of a carnivorous deer into the forest. And I was a flesh-eating deer. And I would go and kill the sages and eat their flesh. And I would feast on their blood. I was doing it for a long time. One day, when all the sages came to know about my identity, they told Ram. And Ram started striking arrows towards the other people who are accompanying me. But then I took a turn and I ran away from there. And Rama Bana, Ram's bow, Ram's arrow did not attack me. Do you know why? Because Ram's arrow never attacks a running person. That is the principle of Ram's arrow. As soon as the Ram's arrow goes, if somebody runs away, it will go back to Ram. Only a person who challenges him, the Rama's arrow will kill him. So my friends were killed, but my life was spared. And then now I decided that I will no more be a demon anymore. I became an ascetic. And now here I am performing penances. But let me tell you, even now, Lord Rama comes in my dreams. I sometimes get up from the dream with a thumping heart. And I'm seeing Rama everywhere. And now I'm residing in the middle of the forest. And when I see around all the trees with their barks, immediately I remember Lord Rama with the barks. bearing the tree box. And every tree looks like one ram for me. And it is very, very frightening. In fact, I am so frightened, my dear king, let me tell you. Whenever I hear any word beginning with Ra, like Ratha or Ratna, immediately I become frightened that it is Rama. And I am so frightened. So, Maricha's fear is somewhat similar to Kamsa's fear. So, I was remembering Ram. That's why he was killed by Ram and attained liberation later on. So, he was so extremely fearful. After hearing all these things, Ravana said, so you are done with whatever you wanted to say? Now I did not come to hear any good advice from you. Now you hear me what I am telling you. And then of course Ravana wanted him to become a deer and all that, the story goes. But you can see how much fear the kings could instill in the hearts of such unreasonable rogues and thieves and the trouble creators to religion. Just see. You can see that. So, unwanted elements in society were always kept under control. In the Vedic times, you see that. Very powerful. Very chivalrous kings. Actually, you will find the glories of every king. One of the glories of every king is that he is very chivalrous and keeps irreligious elements under control. And that is why a king is supposed to balance between religious principles and being chivalrous and subduing the irreligious elements. He has to do both the things. Because if a king is only performing religious activities and not protecting the citizens, then the citizens may be exploited by such elements, religious elements. So one of the dharma duties of the king was to keep such unwanted elements under control and keep them away. And in the material world is so created that there will always be such elements at all times. You will always find that. And they have to be controlled by force. So there has to be a rule. Now you see government of most of the countries are selling liquor. They are allowing lottery. Because government is making a big profit through lottery. And it is many people buy lottery because it is a government authenticated lottery. Government still is there. So how do you think a government which is promoting lottery, which is promoting liquor, can give protection to its citizens? How can it offer protection when it allows people to indulge in this kind of things? And officializing it and making it available freely for more and more people. So, I was reading in one of the Prabhupada's purports in the first canto, that an ideal king in the Vedic times would have Ekadashi for all the people in society. Nobody would eat on Ekadashi day. Nobody would touch grains on Ekadashi day. And the king would be arranging spies to see whether everyone is following it. Somebody is not following, they become punishable also. Can you imagine? So the Shastras were the same penal codes for the king to control the people also. There was no difference. Same Shastras are used for running the kingdom also. Unlike the modern days when we have an Indian penal code which is different from the Shastra. And they may have many things against Shastra also. So in the Vedic times the kings simply followed the Brahmanas and they were handing over the God's laws to the people. And helping the Brahmanas to make the people God conscious, Krishna conscious. Because Brahmanas are physically weak and Kshatriyas are chivalrous, physically chivalrous. But the Brahmanas are very intelligent. They study the scriptures and preach. So Kshatriyas would use their prowess for a positive purpose, for propagating religious principles. That was the way so wonderfully the Vedic society was organized. So what relevance can be observed from this purport in our own personal lives? None of us are kings carrying bow and arrow, you know, killing the animals in the forest or subduing the thieves, nor are we going to have stun guns or machine guns to control the thieves and rogues in the society. So, Bhagavatam, whenever we study Bhagavatam, we should always find out some point of relevance to our personal lives. Just as King Parikshit is offering protection to the citizens. Like I was telling you, Lord Ram is offering protection to the sages. Similarly, Lord Ram also was offering protection to Mother Sita also. Sita was very confident of Ram's protection. Ravana had come to take away Mother Sita in the form of a mendicant, and then Sita came to know Ravana could not control himself. He told her everything. I am the king of the Rakshasas. In fact, I have even defeated my half-brother Kuvera. He said, and I have taken away his golden chariot. And he said, in this way, I have 5,000 Rakshasas whom I rule over. And he said, if you come with me, I will make you the queen of all my previous consorts. So when Sita heard all these things, she became furious. She said, what are you talking? Lord Rama is as steady as the Meru Parvat, as steady as the Meru mountain. Lord Rama's prowess is as mighty as the ocean. Lord Rama's power is like as powerful as the sun. His stage is like the sun. She said, he is like Garuda and you are like a crow. She said, and he is like nectar and you are like a stale gruel. And she was telling many things like that. So boldly Mother Sita was chastising Ram, you will hear. And she said, you try to kidnap me and just wait and see what happens to you. She was very bold. Of course she was kidnapped, and then subsequently you see how Lord Rama kills Ravana and brings her back. Another pastime comes to my mind from Mahabharata also. You know, when all the Pandavas were away, once Draupadi was alone in the forest, you know, plucking some flowers in the garden. That time, Jayadratha is passing along with his son Koshikata and a huge army. Actually, he is going to marry somebody. You know, he is marry a woman, another country woman. So he is going along with his army. From a distance, he is seeing Draupadi in the woods. And immediately he is stunned by her beauty. And then he tells his son Koshikata, hey, go and find out. Who is that beautiful woman? I am actually going to marry someone. It seems that there is no need. I can marry this woman only. So his mind is so much distracted. So Koshikata approaches her like a fox approaching a lion's den. It is explained. So he goes near her and asks her whereabouts and everything, and brings the news back to the father. Then Jayadratha goes. He tells his son, you be here, I'll come. So he goes ahead and then he starts talking to her in a loose language, very loose language, which is not befitting a man to talk to a married woman. So then she says that, you know, all my husbands are away, and she gives him water for washing his feet, and she even gives him a lunch, because, you know, you should always respect a guest. So she respects him and says that, you know, you keep waiting, my husband shall come. And she says, no. He says that, no, you marry me and we will enjoy together. And he starts catching her hand and dragging her into his chariot. In fact, the Pandavas had put, I think, Dhaumya Rishi for protecting her. So Dhaumya Rishi is giving shlokas from the scripture. He's telling him, hey, it's not proper for you to mishandle another man's wife like this. But he doesn't care. He puts her in the chariot and takes her ahead, and the army goes ahead. And this Dhaumya Rishi is running behind the army. He's a Brahmana, what can he do? And he goes on shouting and yelling and speaking principles of dharma, what you should be doing. And then Draupadi is also shouting in the chariot. She's saying, just wait and see. When my husbands come, what will happen to you? Just wait and see. And then later on, when Bhima, Yudhishthira, they all come home, they come to understand that Draupadi has been taken away. Then immediately they all rush to the spot. And then they come from opposite side. I don't know how they reach the other side. They go ahead of him and come from the opposite side. And then this fellow is wondering, who are those great soldiers coming? And then Draupadi has a great fun. You read in Mahabharata, you will see. She is telling, you see that personality with the body like a golden lustre, the tall personality, who is the personification of all religious principles, he is my husband, Yudhishthira Maharaj. She is telling. And then she is telling another person, you see that person carrying the bow and arrow in his hand. He is Arjuna, she is telling. And he will not spare your life. She is telling. And the other fellow who is very, very tall and very majestic, who is fuming with anger. You can never stand in front of him. That is Bhima. So she's introducing everyone one by one. Of course, whatever she says happens subsequently, and they finish him off. Very interesting. So if you want to know more about Chaivalra's kings, you can read that section in Mahabharata. Very interesting. Your hair will stand on end. We can only delight reading it because there is no Kshatriya in this age. So you clearly see in that particular scene difference between a Brahmana and a Kshatriya, isn't it? You find Dhauma Rishi is a Brahmana, is giving Sadupadesh to Jayadrath, you know, you should follow the scriptures, don't do this. But how does Bhima give Sadupadesh? Through the Bhavandara. You hear that. So you see many examples of chivalrous and charitable kings and compassionate kings. So it's a very big subject. Talk about every king you take, there is so much to say. We can, if you consider every great king, you will find examples like that. Coming to our own personal life, how are these things relevant to us? I remember hearing from His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, once he was speaking about how in spiritual life, he said, the most valuable asset for a practitioner is faith. So offering protection to the faith of those who are dependent on us is the greatest protection that every person should do. Like for example, the Vedic times also, when you say protecting women, there are two types of protection. You have to see that the men don't exploit women. At the same time, you also have to see that the women don't become coquettish to disturb a religious man. Both. You know, the word in English, we use the word flirting for the man and coquettish for the woman. Both have the same meaning. So, if women become coquettish, which means they like dallying with man, or they don't dress properly, they don't behave properly with other man, trying to pull a religious man down. So, women have to be prevented by the fathers, even for that also. If a father sees a woman is not dressed properly, he will chastise her, you rascal daughter. She also becomes a rascal, isn't it? Because she is unnecessarily inviting man. Like a man may be, normally speaking, stable, but a woman doesn't dress properly, then man can become unstable, isn't it? Like in Delhi police, recently gave in the newspaper, there are a lot of rapes and criminal activities going on in North India, Delhi. So, somebody interviewed the chief policeman. So they said more than 50% of the problems are because of women only. Because they don't dress properly. You see the way they dress. That is why the men are already, their minds are wound up because of seeing dirty movies. And then when women are not proper, then the men fall prey to religion. So they were saying, let us send the news to all the Mahila Samajas. Let them first train the woman to dress decently. Vedic dressing is that a woman dresses in her sari and she covers the head and all that. So, woman has to be protected from becoming irreligious, because if she becomes irreligious, then she will allow man to exploit her, and ultimately religion will go down. At the same time, another type of protection is, there are also religious women who want to uphold religious principles coming from pure families, and they may be exploited by man, and they have to be protected from such men also. So in the same manner, in our spiritual lives, for example, when we say offering protection to our people, so Maharaj was talking, he was telling, elaborately was speaking this lecture on how in the modern times there is internet. In internet, people are going and downloading pornography sites and watching it, as if it's something very nice to see, but they are actually getting entangled in the mesh of Maya. So he said, net means, what is net? That which is used for catching fishes. So our fish-like minds are caught by the internet, he was telling. And then somebody said, Maharaj, it's also called as website. He said, see, web is there, web. The web of a spider's web. Why is it made? So that it can catch all the flies. You know, any fly goes there, it gets trapped there. Gets wound up there. So he was telling the website and internet. He said, these are agents, Kali Raja's agents, which are meant for capturing the minds of people in Kali Yuga. So he said, we have to protect our devotees from falling prey to this illusion. So now, for example, we may tell outside people that, you know, why are you putting this kind of cinema posters and billboards? Why are you promoting such kind of pornography books in the market? Why are you, promoting liquor and meat industry and slaughterhouses and McDonald's and all that? That is one way we can do in order to prevent religion. Like Prabhupada smashes all the modern materialism to dust in his purports. We can also do that. But there is not going to be a very large scale change in that kind of criticism. But at the same time, we also have to preach to our people in not taking to those opportunities of Kali Raj, which are provided by Kali Raj. So both way protection we have to give. So we also have to tell our people, okay, even if the world is offering you nasty things for enjoyment, you should have the sadbuddhi to not accept them. You have to say no to the wrong things. That kind of protection has to be given also. Like we say, protection for the children. When you say protection for the children, it's again two way. Nobody should exploit the child. Yes, teacher should not beat the child or, teacher should not sexually abuse the child. Yes, it is understandable. At the same time, sometimes the child also becomes naughty. Like for example, the child doesn't do the homework. Sometimes the child wants to buy and eat things which are not favorable for the child. He wants to eat something that is surrounded by flies. So you have to protect the child from accepting things which are harmful for him also. So both way protection has to be given with respect to child. So in this way, as far as spiritual leaders are concerned, first of all, they have to lead a very exemplary life. If the leaders are not exemplary, that is the best way to bring corruption into the society. ISKCON is a big society. It's becoming bigger and bigger. So the leaders have to be spotless and very, very exemplary. Like, imagine, for example, a teacher makes a rule in the school that all the girls in the class should come very simple. They should not wear lipstick, they should not put nail polish, they should not wear stylish hairstyle or dresses, they should be very simple. They should look like, like Satyavan Savitri or like Sita Mata or like Anasuya or such great personalities. They should look very, very simple. And imagine if the teacher herself comes in a miniskirt, with lipstick and nail polish and everything. Can you imagine, what do you expect the children to be? You understand? So they are also going to be like that. They have set an example. So you find, like I had a professor, one professor Garg, who would be teaching in the class, with one hand he would have a cigarette, he would be smoking in the class, and other hand he would be writing on the board. So these great scientists, with all their intelligence, what do you think can they offer the society, with no character? Just see. What is the use of such people teaching? Because more things are caught than taught. So people are going to learn by observation. So all of us can ask this question to ourselves. On one hand, in our heart, due to our conditioned nature, we like glamour. We cannot deny that. We like glamour. We are fascinated by glamour. If somebody says, no, I am completely a sadhu, many people may say that, but ask yourself, touch your heart and ask, are you not attracted by glamour? So we like to impress people. We like to put up glamour. The tendency is there in every conditioned soul. On the other hand, we also want to be religious and pure. That is the positive spiritual element in us, which actually pulls us towards the spiritual world. So we have both these tendencies. There's a bad tendency, there's a good tendency. So we have to put ourselves under the custody of advanced souls, being at their feet, and we have to allow them to purify us of our impure tendencies and remain in their protection. So for those who are becoming leaders, if they have to have the capability to offer protection, they need the qualification. Otherwise, how can you offer protection without qualification? Like here, the glories of Parikshit Maharaj are being spoken here. All these glories. Because of all these wonderful qualities, Parikshit could offer protection to his people. Otherwise, how can he offer? So when you accept the responsibility, along with that post that is coming to you, you should be a responsible person. You should be a person of very high character. You should be an exemplary person. And that itself is protection, first of all. 99% of the people will simply emulate your model. You will see that. If you are a preacher, you preach, you will often find many people simply doing what the preacher does. And depending on the way the preacher conducts himself or herself, the people who are under them, they also become very similar to that. You will see that. Many of the qualities in the subordinates will be similar to what you find in the superiors. So, if we at all want to give protection, we have to be convinced of this fact, and we should be struggling for purity. We should be struggling for responsible behavior. We should be struggling for becoming an ideal example. And it's a constant struggle. And if we are unable to set an example, we should stand aside and say that I don't want to be a leader. One should not be a leader at all. One shouldn't be eager to be a leader and not set a good example. And after that, one also should be intelligent. As Prabhupada said, ISKCON can progress. How? Prabhupada said, by organization and intelligence. Once Prabhupada said this to Giriraj Swami. So, apart from having our purity and example, we also should have very good organization and intelligence to curb the unwanted elements to the best of our ability. Like, for example, we should not give opportunities for our devotees where they will be able to break the four regulative principles. For example, the relationship between man and woman should be so restricted that there is no opportunity for illicit connection and affairs within the spiritual circle. That should not be allowed, because that kind of restriction should be there. Otherwise, what happens, even in spiritual societies, man, woman, they freely associate, and then over a period of time, they develop thick relationship, and then gradually everything goes down. So, Srila Prabhupada's writing purpose is, only for the sake of service, there can be some exchange between man and woman. Otherwise, absolutely no connection. Because these are the areas where Kaliraj can enter, isn't it? Kaliraj has these areas, meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, and where people hoard the gold. So wherever there is a possibility of Kali entering, we have to find out ways and means to curb it right in the beginning itself. So Prabhupada has given all the principles, like rising in the morning and chanting the holy names. The chanting of the holy name is like bombardment for Kaliraj. It's like bombarding Kali's influence. It's extremely powerful. So vibrant chanting of the holy name can drive away Kali's ill effects. They cannot come. It's impossible for Kali to enter. One will lose the tendency for enjoying. Just like a serpent loses its poisonous fangs. See, the dangerous part of a serpent is what? The poisonous teeth. If the poisonous teeth is broken and removed, then the serpent can be, you know, used as a plaything. Sometimes you find people carrying a serpent in a small basket, you have seen. Sometimes he takes and puts on his neck and everything. He knows, because there are no teeth. There's no teeth inside. Similarly, our senses also will become, when the enjoying mentality in the senses is removed, then one can be free from the ill effects of Kaliraj. So, like we are seeing about Parikshit Maharaj offering protection through his chivalrous nature, so we also should be chivalrous in offering protection. Prabhupada went to the West and he offered such a protective atmosphere, even for people in the West, to practice Krishna consciousness. He bombarded the Kaliraj's domain, and he established a Krishna conscious domain. And he established temples with deities, temples with worship, devotees doing kirtan, going in Harinam in the street, distributing books. It's like, you know, the Indian spy going into Pakistan and doing such things. It's like that. So it's not an easy thing. So great acharya like Prabhupada can do that. And Prabhupada has given us, like a devotee right aptly said, he built a house in which the whole world can live in. So Prabhupada has given us this wonderful shelter. And we have to increase this shelter more and more in order to offer this shelter to more and more people of this dirty age of Kali Yuga. So we can offer protection for the body, we can offer protection for the mind, we can offer protection for the intelligence by giving faith. Ultimately, we have to offer spiritual protection for the people, not to get distracted to go to the Maya's allurements, not to get distracted to go into Sahajaism, not to become distracted by mayavad, not to get distracted by whimsical behavior. So one of the reasons we talk about the anarthas is that we can beware of them right from the beginning itself. So we have to protect ourselves and we also have to offer protection to others. So offering protection can also be through systems. That's why we have made the systems like counseling system. So there's a particular kind of system. Why the system? Because the system offers shelter for the people. So they cannot fall prey. Like for example, people enjoy when there is a nice community. So we offer a community to people. People enjoy nice food. We offer nice prasad. People enjoy a vibrant atmosphere where there is cultural activities practiced. So we offer cultural activities which are Krishna conscious. So by offering all the things what one would otherwise get in material life, offering the same things in connection to Krishna. Like as it is said in Bhagavatam, what is that famous verse? Idam hi pumsas tapasashutasya va swishtasya suktasya ca buddhi dattayo avichyuto varta kavibhir nirupito yaduttama shloka gunan varnanam. Science, arts, philosophy, poetry, everything, culture, they all should be used for what? For propagating Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is the most intelligent acharya of the modern age. And many other organizations are learning from ISKCON. Like in Pune, there was an organization which requested us, you teach us how to dress the deity. So we went to the temple, they had Rama, Sita Ram and Radha Krishna deities they had. So now they have learned. So they said, we used to have the dress only once in a year, we used to change. And after they came here, they saw morning, evening, we are changing the dress. And they also wanted to have many dress. Now they have become expert also now. And they are dressing the deities very beautifully. Similarly, Swaminarayan Math, they sent a team of some 20 brahmacharis to go to ISKCON and learn how to dress the deities, how to worship the deities very nicely. You know, 6 times a day offering bhog and worshipping like that. I heard in Bombay, Radha Gopinath Prabhu was telling me, in Mira Road, one fellow was having a book table of Quran. Please buy Quran, buy Quran. He was selling. He said, I have never seen people selling Quran ever. He said, where did they learn from? You can guess what. So, there are many people learning many good things and all this is Prabhupada's mastermind, Prabhupada's intelligence. That's why many great management material experts say, Prabhupada had the mastermind of executive management, which Prabhupada had. And that's how Prabhupada could run a worldwide movement. At least we should perform a drop of what Prabhupada performed. Srila Prabhupada ki? Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki? Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki? Thank you very much.